WAUK Jackson. Listen to Mike and Mike morning starting at 5 on 540 ESPN. From the quarterback of the pack, Aaron Rodgers. It's Tuesdays with Aaron. Here's your host, Jason Wilde.
Bum, 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 bum.
Now tell me what you're gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to run.
When judgment comes for you,
when judgment comes for you.
Tell me what you're gonna do.
It's that time of the week. Once again, his real job interfering with our schedule, but it is time for Tuesdays with Aaron, the Aaron Rodgers Show, with Green Bay Packers quarterback, the reigning Super Bowl MVP, and the leader of the undefeated Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron, how are you today?
Doing good. Doing good.
It is a very special, much like a very special blossom, it's a very special Tuesdays with Aaron because it is in advance of your birthday. And I said to myself, what do you get for the guy who has everything? You know, he's 28 years, going to be 28 years old.
Yeah,
top of the world. So I dug deep, and I found you some generic grape soda.
Thank you.
$0.69. It was a pretty good deal, I got to tell you. Now, we talked about this last week. Is this acceptable? Will this get? Will you drink this at your home?
What is going on? Yeah, I would definitely make sure I go through this here. I love grape soda.
Even though it's not crush.
Yeah.
So that may not be up to your.
I'm gonna give it a shot.
It's a 2008, I think.
It's hard to mess up grape soda.
How was your miniature bye week, and how was your Thanksgiving?
It was excellent. Thanksgiving was great. Went over to AJ's house, and his wife is an incredible cook. So it was a great meal. I talked with BJ Raji last night, so it might not have been the same kind of meal he got over at Pickett's house. I can only imagine the kind of food that the D-line were served. But it was an excellent, excellent meal, and Laura is an incredible cook. So we had a few of the guys went over there and relaxed, and it was great to be able to sleep in Friday morning, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, Monday morning.
So you stayed here the whole time?
I did.
Now, AJ and Laura have a little one, right?
Yes, Lennon.
Pickett's got like 6 kids.
5, I think, yeah.
Was this a traditional big Thanksgiving?
No, I didn't go to Pickett's house.
No, I know. Yeah. Was at AJ's, was it just a bunch of you single guys and the Hawks kind of hosting?
No, it was. There were some couples there. And then a few of us, single gentlemen. It was just a nice little group, and food was excellent. Just kind of relaxed and had the food coma as we kind of passed out watching that Baltimore-San Francisco game.
And then you slept in Friday. You did not go out to get the bargains of the Black Friday shopping?
I tried to go out Friday afternoon to my dismay, there was quite a few people out.
You tried to go shopping the day after Thanksgiving?
I tried, yes.
Did you go incognito?
I needed a couple of things. No. No.
So where did you go shopping?
I'm not going to give away my secrets, but I will say that I met one very crazy individual, woman, who made it very awkward. And about at that point, I said, okay, you know, it's probably time to head on back home.
So did you accomplish any shopping before?
Yes, I got what I needed there. It wasn't any Christmas gifts. There was a couple things I needed.
Okay. Speaking of Thanksgiving and recipes, you used that phrase a couple times. You used it on our show last week when I talked about picking against you, which I did again, and apparently you read everyone who picked against you.
I didn't see you picked against us. But I saw on the one of the shows everyone on the panel except for one had picked against us.
Okay. Well, you brought up in postgame in Detroit after the 27-15 victory that everyone is searching for the recipe to beat you.
Right.
Do you think there is one? And my follow-up to that is, do you think weather is part of that? Is there a component regarding the weather to that recipe?
I think I use the phrase recipe for two reasons. One, it had been used by someone who was picking against us, so I thought it was apropos, if you will.
That's a good word.
Yes, to the situation. And two, because it was Thanksgiving, so it had a double whammy there. I don't believe you can say there's a recipe to beat us when we haven't beaten yet. I think there are ideas, maybe, on how you can get after us. But does weather play a role? I think a small role. Depending on the severity of the weather, it can have an impact on any game. But I think you have to factor that in with the opponent you're playing, the setting, be it home or away. Those are all individual factors as well. So I don't think you can put weather maybe above those other factors.
It's pretty windy out there today. I don't know what it's going to be like at MetLife Stadium on Sunday, but you talked last week about how that is really the biggest wild card in weather. You aren't going to get to play in a dome again, assuming you get the home field advantage you're looking for, until theoretically Super Bowl 46. Is that, I mean, does that hurt you in any way?
Me personally or our team?
I would think that those would be both related.
Okay. Just wanted to be specific with your question there. I don't think it hurts myself or our team. We obviously have been a pass-first team and had success doing that. We're going to continue to try and do that. But I think everyone knows when you get into the winter months, you have to try and find some semblance of balance in your offensive rhythm. And so we're going to need to do that. We're going to need to run the ball probably more effectively than we've been doing it the last few games. And that being said, that's going to help open up our play-action game and our shots down the field. So I think when you get into a field that it might not be the best footing, I don't think you can immediately dismiss the notion that you're not going to be able to, or it's going to be difficult to throw the ball. I think you have to factor in that not only is it going to be difficult footing for the offense, but for the defense. And as the offensive player knows where he's going, the defensive player has to react. I think that gives you a slight advantage. And if you're able to grip the ball effectively and not have to deal with the severe winds to go along with the cold conditions, I think you should have a good opportunity to throw the ball effectively.
The news came out today that Ndamukong Suh has been suspended 2 games by the league. He is going to appeal. I know you didn't see it live. Having seen the replay, you actually have your back to it. You didn't know what was happening at the time.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm guessing you've seen the replay now. What do you think?
I think that the actions that he did on the ground at first, kind of banging Evans' head in the ground, I think those are – that's not a finable action, probably not even a 15-yard penalty. But when he got up and stomped on his arm or elbow or whatever area it was, I think my only really red flag with that – I mean, it's an obvious 15-yarder, and I was expecting, there to be at least a 2-game. I think a lot of people have been seeing that on the news the last couple of days. But I think you have to be a little bit alarmed by his reaction, his post-game comments. When you make a mistake like that, and everybody saw it, it was obviously a large audience watching that game. I think if he just would have said, you know what, I got caught up in the moment, I was frustrated, and I made a decision that I regret. I'm sorry I hurt my team, and I'm sorry to the fans. And that would have been like, okay, well, he gets it. But I just don't know if he understands, what he did. Now, obviously, there's been some, he apologized, it sounds like, to the commissioner, and he made a statement on his Facebook or something about it. But I think you're a little after the fact in that, and he probably should have done that at the podium there after the game.
You've talked before about your rivalry with the Bears, and I've noticed that one of the words that I think we both like a lot is the word respect and respectful, and that's very important, that you respect your opponents, you respect your teammates.
Respect the game.
You respect the Bears, and the Bears have respected you. I think your Vikings rivalry would fall relatively under that category, right? How do you view the Lions rivalry?
I think it's going into the game, it's going to be a competitive game and it's going to be a physical game. I think just going into that game, you have to be a little bit more aware of some of the after-the-whistle things that could happen. So as opposed to when you play in Chicago and Minnesota, you may be a little bit more surprised if one of those things happened, like what happened with Robinson and TJ.
Are you still the NFLPA rep for the team, or have you?
Yes.
The NFLPA has recommended that he appeal. Is that typical? I mean, do they usually do that?
I think that's more protocol. I don't know if that's
okay.
That's not unusual. No.
Looking back a little bit on the Lions game, before we do our inside the helmet, lost in all the discussion about Sue was the fact that Evan Dietrich Smith went in for one of your better offensive linemen and held his own.
Played well. Yeah.
You know, it looks like I saw Josh in the locker room. He's wearing an enormous brace with what appeared to be butterflies on it.
Correct.
Did you help him pick that out?
No, I had nothing to do with that.
You know, how confident are you in Evan, and how much of a loss is it if Josh misses this game and maybe another game or two?
Very confident in Evan. I think it helps that he has a center's mindset when he goes in there because he understands the calls that need to be made. He can anticipate those calls from Scott. He's a very strong and stout lineman. He has incredible upper body strength and a great punch when he's pass setting. I think he, when you lose a guy like Josh, who's just so consistent, so smart, so cerebral out on the field, you worry about who's going to step in. But when you can add Evan in the mix, who's energetic, who's very strong upper body, and who sees the game as a center does, I think you can counterbalance some of the great attributes that Josh gives you by adding Evan in there. So I'm excited about him. But one guy before you get off on this offensive line, I think you really have to single out, as did our team with the game balls they ran out today, you have to single out Marshall Newhouse for his performance on Thursday. Going against one of the top defensive ends in the game and a guy who's borderline crazy on the field. If you just had a camera on Vandenbosch the entire game, his antics and his motor he's like a little more athletic Brady Papinga out there with his borderline out of control behavior at times. But Marshall, I thought, did a great job on him.
You had a little exchange with Vandenbosch, didn't you? Now, was the hit that he had on you clean?
Well, look at my chin here. You let me know. I got a little cut right here.
You do indeed.
Yeah. It hit me in the chin, and it kind of went like this. Oh, I got you good. That one had to hurt. That's how he's talking to me. And I was like, it was a good hit. You know, this is the conversation. He likes to lay on people. If you watch, like I said, if you have a camera on him the entire game and we watch the film, he is late getting to a lot of plays, and he just lays on guys and stays on there. He did it probably at least a half dozen times. So he's laying on me, and I'm laying there. And, you know, we threw a pass, completed, and he's like, I got you good. That had to hurt. And I'm like, you hit me good. That was a good hit. And he goes, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're probably getting a penalty, though. I'm talking to him like this. You're probably getting a penalty. He goes, no way. And so we're finally starting to pile. I think somebody kind of came over to pull him off me because he probably laid there for a while. And I was like, yeah, you know, you got me on the chin there. It's probably a penalty. He goes, no. And then he saw the penalty flag, and he started to go crazy. Similar to the fashion of when he got an offside call last year at home, he proceeded to yell at the white cap, the head ref, that it was Sue who was offsides and not him. No, it was Sue. I mean, he's crazy on the field. And if you watch the game, you know, you see he wears those red contacts. He has a crazy motor.
Wait, what?
He wears red contacts on game day. And I think he enjoys that perception that he's a little bit off.
Do you think you're starting to finally get those calls? Remember there was a time when you couldn't buy a late hit call? Do you think they finally – I don't know if it's like the NBA. You know, our mutual friend Ray Allen went through this his rookie year. Of course, I was covering it, and you were like 10. But he didn't get any calls his first couple of years in the league. Do you think you've gotten beyond that now?
I don't know about that. I really would have to consult some of the film.
What does that mean?
It means no.
Really?
Yeah. I think if you watch the film of that game, if you're going straight by the rules, there may There maybe could have been some other calls as well. I got thrown down by Nick Fairley right in front of the white cap. And
I did see that one.
And there was no no penalty.
Shifting gears, did you watch Monday Night Football last night?
I did.
I know you and wow, you're opening up the soda. It's warm.
It's going to overflow. Nope. Good.
What did you think of what you saw the New Orleans Saints do offensively? I know you're you know, good friends with Drew. You guys also are putting up some monster numbers together. What was your take on that game?
Fun to watch. Fun to watch Drew in his element, controlling the game with tempo and you know, getting the ball out of his hands quickly. I enjoy watching their offense play. They do a number of different things with personnel and formation, and you know, they have they utilize the talents of the guys, which as a quarterback you got to appreciate. So it's fun to watch. I think he's as accurate as it comes in the game, which is evidenced by his you know, his percentage record, and he's above 70 again this year, I believe, still even after last night, and he just plays the position extremely well and consistently. So it's fun to watch, and they got a big one this week. They're playing the Lions.
When we talked about this before you played the San Diego Chargers, because this sets up similarly, they had a disappointing loss on Monday Night Football and had to turn around and play you at home. The Giants, not disappointing in that it was a nail-biter at the end and they lost in overtime like the Chargers did, but they lost in a pretty spectacular fashion. We'll talk about the Giants a little bit more and talk about what you've seen on film later, but when you see that happen to a team before they play you, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think you have to be a little thankful for the schedule, the way it sets up when you give us a nice little 4 days off, and you know, playing Thursday and getting that time off, then they're playing Monday night. That can help us a little bit, because I'm sure there'll be some uncertainty about some of their personnel. They go see Umanura, went out last night at one point. They had, I believe, a couple of the guys who were banged up. One of their linebackers went out. Michael Boley on a short week, you know, his status with his hamstring will be up in the air. So it'll be interesting to see who lines up for him next week. You know, they're 6-5. They're a game back in the wild card, game back in the division. They still play Dallas twice, as you know, they brought up on the telecast a couple times last night. But I think you have to realize the opponent you're playing and the desperation and the understanding of how important this game is. If you watched, and I did briefly, Tom Coughlin's quotes, Justin Tuck's quotes, you know, they understand the importance of this game and getting back in the race in their division. So it's going to be you know, definitely a tough game for us, especially playing on the road.
Last thing before we take our one commercial break in the Aaron Rodgers Show, Tuesdays with Aaron. I thought of you last night. I was on Twitter, and I was having a conversation with your friend Kurt Warner, who had gotten into, I don't want to say hot water, but he had given his opinion on Tim Tebow. And Kurt, obviously demonstrative about his faith. You have not hidden the fact that you are a Christian. You got a lot of questions about it at the Super Bowl, I know. But what Kurt said was basically that in some ways there's a backlash against Tim Tebow because he's so out there about his faith. I'm just wondering, you're friends with Kurt. I think you've taken somewhat of a similar, maybe a little bit more understated, but somewhat similar tack when it comes to your faith. Do you watch Tim Tebow, and do you view kind of the backlash that he has against him from people who maybe are rubbed wrong by it? And do you take that into account when you consider how much of your personal beliefs you share publicly?
Well, I started playing before Tim, so I think these are things that I've thought about for a long time, and I think one thing that I really tried to look at when I was younger player, and I mean like in high school, junior college, and Division One, I was always interested to see how guys talked in their interviews, talked about their faith or didn't talk about their faith. And then the reactions at times. Oh, Bob Costas at one point was critical of a player thanking Jesus Christ after a win, questioning, you know, what would happen if that player had lost, or do you really think that God cares about winning and losing? That all to say that I feel like my stance and my desire has always been to follow a quote from St. Francis of Assisi, who said, "Preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words." So basically, I'm not an over-the-top or an in-your-face kind of guy with my faith. I would rather people have questions about why I act the way I act, whether they view it as positive or not, and ask questions. And then given an opportunity at some point, you know, then you can maybe talk about your faith a little bit. But I firmly believe, just personally, what works for me and what I enjoy doing is letting my actions speak about the kind of character I want to have, and following that quote from St. Francis.
When we come back, we'll take a look inside the helmet, talk about a couple of the plays from the Lions game, look ahead to the Giants, and get to your questions as part of Ask Aaron. You are listening to The Aaron Rodgers Show. Back with you on the Aaron Rodgers Show, Tuesdays with Aaron. Special 28th birthday edition.
It's not my birthday.
It is. It's Friday. Friday's your birthday. Are you going to come back and do another show on Friday?
No.
Then it's the Friday. It's the birthday edition. You know, speaking of birthdays, Ravel Martin, your old friend, was quoted in the Sports Illustrated story about you and your receivers, talking about how you... He kind of let a secret out of the bag. He said you find out everyone's birthday, and
most people's.
You put it in your phone, and you wish them a happy birthday when you see them that day.
That's one of my little techniques I use. I think that I give away a few of these secrets. I don't know; they're probably not even secrets, but I think there's a few things you can do as a leader to really. Make people feel a connection. I think as a leader, you need to have a relationship with the guys you're leading, and it needs to be different for each player. It has to be, there has to be some sort of one-on-one connection. And there's a number of different ways you can do that. I think by remembering somebody's birthday is a way to do it. By giving someone a nickname is a way to do it. By having an inside joke with someone is a way to do it. Because that changes the relationship from a teammate relationship to a friend relationship. And I think there has to be that friend connection in order to become better teammates. So I was, I thought it was important to make sure I made, you make those guys feel special. Because sometimes you don't have practice that day or Mike might not mention it at the end of the day that it's so-and-so's birthday. So, a guy might go all day and nobody said happy birthday to him. I think that'd be a disappointing thing. If you work with 60 guys every day and nobody knows it's your birthday or said anything to you, I think that would be a little disappointing.
Everybody know it's your birthday on Friday?
No, I don't. I don't think so.
I'm sure they're listening to the show.
Yeah, sure they are.
You ever give a nickname that didn't go over very well?
Definitely.
And it stuck anyway, or
those are the ones that stick the best.
The Ginger Wolverine.
You have to make sure other people hear them. If somebody really doesn't like a nickname, you got to kind of share it with a couple other people when they're around. And if those guys like it, then it's going to stick. And if not, if they think it's kind of lame or just not a good one, then it kind of goes away. You move on to the next option.
Have you speaking of nicknames? I know you were really close with Tausch, and I get a little bit of grief because I tend to
cat
steal.
Pig.
Ooh. I wasn't aware of that one.
That's a good one, yeah.
He did the radio for the Badger game.
I heard that. But I heard he was going to do that. Yeah.
How's your relationship with Brian Bulaga? I've taken a little grief on Twitter today because I sometimes use our show to help my stories that I'm writing later in the week, and I know Brian Bulaga gave up a sack on Thursday, but he's played pretty well for you and taken over for the.
Brian's played great, and we have a great relationship. I think from the first day he got here, you knew he was going to fit in really well. A Midwest guy who just has a real, easygoing feel about him and a personality that's easy to get along with. He seems to be always in a pretty good mood.
A little bit like Tausch?
Yeah, I think so. He doesn't maybe joke as much as Tausch or pull pranks on people. His body might look a little bit better than Tausch in a uniform and out, but... But no, Brian's a great guy, great player. On the sack he gave up, he wasn't aware of the snap count change that we made there, unfortunately. So it wasn't, you hate one like that because if he had been 100% sure on the snap count, we probably hit Randall Cobb for a touchdown who's coming open there on the left side running a corner route. But I think Brian's played excellent this year.
Good glimpse inside the huddle there inside the helmet on that play on that sack. But before we get to inside the helmet, Mike keeps deferring when you win the kickoff, when you win the coin toss.
I love it.
Why? What do you love about it?
I just think there's two advantages that come with it. One is very selfish, but it's I enjoy letting the defense go out there first. I think our team does as well. I think for an offense, it's a little bit easier to have the defense start on the field, to kind of relax as the early part of the game starts, and then go in, maybe taking away some of those nerves for some of the guys. So I think it really helps our offense. And two, which we've used to our advantages here on a couple of occasions, you can double up on teams at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. We've done a good job. I don't know how many points we scored in the first possession of the second half, but I think there's definitely been at least a few touchdown drives. And we can double that up with a touchdown at the end of the first half like we've done in a couple games this year, did last year as well. That's when you can really separate yourself from the opponent.
When you when you're a captain, do you always go tails never fails?
I went tails this week. I'm not a captain that often. You usually get maybe a couple chances, and in the playoffs, Woodson makes all the calls, and he's a heads guy. I'm a tails never fails guy. Wood's a heads guy, but we won most of the coin tosses that I remember in the playoffs. But went tails this week, won the toss and deferred.
Let's go inside the helmet. I wanted to talk about James Jones's touchdown. I feel like I spend more time defending James Jones on Twitter from people who don't like him than any other player. Take us through that touchdown and what happened there.
That was just him running a post route and us kind of waiting for the right coverage. We had a similar play call, thought on a couple different plays, and we're kind of waiting until we got a quarter's coverage or a quarter's safety to that side. Because in a quarter's coverage, the safety to the side of the fake, if he sees a tight end block, a lot of times kind of dives in on the run, and you know you got a one-on-one with a lot of open space in the middle for your outside receiver. So that's what we did. We just did a hard play fake to our right side of the line with our tight end blocking and had James run a post route. As we got almost to the snap, the pre-snap read really looked like cover four. So I was excited about that, knowing we had quarters to that side, knowing that Chris Harris, the safety on that side, would probably bite on a fake if we got a good enough fake. I wanted to make sure I definitely got the ball extended, got it out there. We got a good fake and came up. And it's one of those balls where you know he's open. You know it's a chance to have a big play, maybe a touchdown. Don't overthrow him, but don't underthrow him too bad. So the ball was a little bit lower than I wanted to, but James made a nice catch, was able to stay in stride. I think he's kind of like Jordy. He has that deceptive speed. He got in the open field, and nobody caught him.
How important is the play-action game to your offense? Because I think from the outside looking in, I mean, we've seen it work a bunch this year, but we kind of think of you guys as this, you're in the shotguns, a lot of times in an empty backfield, and we kind of think that that's not all that important to what you guys do, but it looks like it's become very important, at least a few plays a game.
It is important, and it's those, three to six plays where you really need the line to make it look like a run, the back and myself to have a good fake in order to open up some of those windows. And so the few times we did it in the game, Greg had a big catch. The first play of the game had some action on it and was able to hit Jordy, get us out of the backed up situation there. So it's important to our game. But to make it even more effective, I think we need to run the ball a little bit better.
The other play I wanted to ask you about, it got all the attention because of what Ndamukong Suh did at the end of it. But take us through that third down play that you end up incomplete just out of the reach of Donald Driver.
Yeah, we just had a combination there, an empty set. They weren't bringing pressure on that play. We had a three-receiver combination to the left, and James and Donald to the right had a two-receiver combination route with Donald running a corner and James running just like a dash inside. He was just running kind of inside. He got pushed down. James got pushed down a little bit too much because Donald had a good release in the line of scrimmage, but James kind of, because of his angle, his defender kind of trips Donald inadvertently, and without that, it's a touchdown. Unfortunately, right as he's tripping slightly out of, I think it was McDonald or whoever's guarding James, because of James' angle, he kind of tripped Donald. Right as he's tripping, the ball's coming out, and just put it a little bit too far out there. But
you guys ran 52 offensive plays against the Lions. If I gave you the down and distance and the what time of the game it is, can you tell me what happened on all 52 plays?
Maybe not all 52. I like to get upper 80 percentile, 90 percentile.
Is there a I always feel like maybe I'm asking about the wrong play since I pick those plays. Is there a play that stands out to you from that game that I should have asked about that I didn't? I'm going to ask you that every week from here on.
Positive or a negative?
Whichever, whatever you choose. It's your show.
Well, I think one of the big plays in the game, when we're up by 16 there on a 3rd and 4 in the fourth quarter driving, after we started on, I believe, we were backed up on our own territory for sure, but we had a 3rd and 4, and we had the 3-by-1 set with JerMichael on the backside by himself running a go route down the sideline, and the other three guys running one of our combinations. And was actually thinking JerMichael before the snap because he had a safety on him. He wasn't open in my initial look, so I came back to the front side, and James was kind of running a stutter move and was able to hit him on a back shoulder throw when he was kind of running even with the defender. I believe it was Eric Wright at the time, and James made a nice catch, stayed in bounds, and that play, keeping that drive going, allowed us to do a number of things, take more time off the clock, obviously keep that drive going, get us into field goal range, which eventually put the final 3 points on the board, which gave us a 3-score lead, which at the time kind of let us know we were going to win that game.
According to the official scorebook, 3rd and 5 from the 39, a 24-yard gain.
Well, we had 3rd and 4, I believe, in our on our play sheet today.
I wasn't correcting you. I was just trying to find.
No, yeah. Well, it was a long 4.
32-yard field goal from Mason Crosby. Let's look ahead to the Giants. You talked a little bit about them earlier. This is a team that has a little bit of experience facing undefeated teams. It's a team that has some experience with getting after quarterbacks with its front four. What have you seen so far on film and in your preparation?
Talented front. Very talented front. I think they dress 7 or 8 guys up front. They roll them all through. And a lot of times they'll put four of their 5 top pass rushers all, with a hand down. 2 of them playing at the defensive tackle position on 3rd downs. When you can line up Jason Pierre-Paul, Dave Tollefson, used to be a Green Bay Packer,
yeah,
has made himself into a very, very fine pro. Osiu Manura, Matthias Kiwanuka, Justin Tuck, any 4 of those guys with their hand down, at the same time rushing, you got a good chance to get after the passer. Those guys are all very good pass rushers in their own right. A lot of the same personnel as we saw at the end of last year. Antro Wall starts the safety but comes down the nickel. They bring Deion Grant in. Kenny Phillips is in the secondary. Webster is in the secondary. Aaron Ross in the secondary. They have a rookie from Nebraska. I think it's Prince. I don't want to mess up his last name.
Well, then we'll just call him Prince.
Prince, yep. Prince is back from, I think he broke his foot maybe in the preseason, and he's back. He's played the last couple games with interception, I believe. So it's a talented front. They have multiple scheme that they run, zone blitzes, empty blitzes, man pressure with 2 high and 1 high. So they give you a lot of different looks. But in general, they want to get after the passer with their front 4 and expect to. Jason Pierre-Paul is having a Pro Bowl caliber season. And, I think all their guys are very active, tall, long-levered guys, and it's going to be important for us to pass protect well this week.
Do you, on a side note, when you go to New York, do you get to go into the city or just hang out at the hotel, or what do you do?
No, I mean, I don't do a whole lot on the road trips. I don't want to get off somewhere where I can't get back in time for the meeting, first of all. But
you ever gotten fined?
Yes, not on the road. Never on the road.
Okay. Is it a big fine?
Yeah.
If you miss a meeting?
Well, I've never missed a meeting.
Or
been a couple minutes late to a meeting before.
Okay.
And that's before I only set – that's when I used to set 1 alarm, and now there's about 5, just in case.
Let's get to Ask Aaron. And the first question, and this guy sent me a copy of his ID to prove to me that this is his real name. This question comes from Paul Horning, but not the Paul Horning. Are there any Aaron Rodgerses out there? Have you come across any?
Yep.
Paul wants to know, you seem annoyed, and rightly so, when refs call a neutral zone infraction versus offsides.
Gosh.
That's why this is such a good – not only does he have the good name, but he's got the good question. And they whistle the play dead. What's the difference between the two, and do you try and lobby to let the play go, or what's the deal?
All the time. We're always telling them, let the play go, unless it's unabated, which means he's going to drill me if they let the play go, and there's no chance a guy's going to get in his way to block him. You should let it go. I mean –
free play.
The majority of the time, a guy jumps off sides, he gets back right away. It rarely, well, there was on the goal line. I don't know why that guy just ran across the line, but rarely in a normal set is there a guy jumping way off sides, just keeps on running. You know, they usually jump off, try and get back. We snap it, free play.
Right.
I think the thing that really bothers myself, Mike, our players, is if a guy jumps off sides and one of our guy moves before a snap, fine. Okay, that's fine, offsides. But if a guy jumps, is in the neutral zone, or two of them did, like in the game on Thursday, and nobody on our team moves, and we snap it, and there's no unabated where the guy's going to drill me without getting blocked, let it go. We had a couple, who was it? It was against San Diego, I think it was, recently. Maybe it was a home game. I can't even remember what game it was. But there was about three they called, and two of them for sure there was no one unabated. And the other one, I mean, it's how do you blow it? It's just that is very frustrating for me and a great question.
Another, I thought, a good question comes from Jeffrey. He says, can you explain your ability to keep your receivers safe on routes across the middle? He watched the Monday Night Football game. He said there were a couple of close ones last night. That is an underrated skill, in my opinion, for quarterbacks, because you can get your guys hurt if you're not good at it.
Well, I think it's all about ball placement, and I think it's about caring about your receivers, too. It's never been my goal to you know, have anybody get laid out or set anybody up. Now, it happens from time to time. You might not see a guy, or a guy might make a great reaction to it, or you might throw a ball off, you know, too high. I had one against the Saints in 2008 when we played down there. Greg got rocked. I threw a bad ball to him. It was a tight coverage. Threw it behind him. It was high. He got hit. 15-yard penalty. You hate that because you love those guys. JerMichael in 2009, we're playing the Browns, and I threw a deep crossing route into cover two. I thought I gave him enough time to see the corner who was kind of sloughing off. Didn't. He hits J. Mike on the knees, out for 5 weeks. You don't want to see any of that. Some of it's, you know, very unavoidable, but I think a lot of it is just making sure you're taking care of your guys.
Tim asks, your mom mentioned in the E60 piece that your number one goal is not to be the best quarterback but the best person. He's unsure of the wording. Can you elaborate on that? I'm guessing that that's one of those instances where maybe your mom, as a mom, says a little bit too much. You didn't necessarily want that out there?
No, I don't know if I wanted that out there. I don't know if I actually said those words. Maybe she was pulling some inception schemes and entering my subconscious. But I just think it's a desire to fully realize my potential off the field with the platform I've been given.
So you're saying you're misquoted by your mom?
No, I'm not going to say that.
Okay. Frank asks a question that it got my attention, so it's hard for me to pass
up.
Too
tempting to pass up.
It references a quote that you had in a previous Sports Illustrated story. He says, do you think all fans have shut up and gotten on board by now?
That I definitely never said. Those words in succession were never uttered out of
really?
My mouth. Yep, I said that at the time, and I'll say it again. Those words in succession were never uttered out of my mouth.
So what do you do in an instance like that? Because I just make up quotes when I write about you.
Yeah. You get frustrated by it anytime you're misquoted. I think that's kind of a crutch at times for some players when they don't like what they've said.
I would agree.
That instant, 100%, was a large answer that was
boiled down, put together
to make it look like I said that. In no way, I'll say it one more time. In no way did those words in succession ever come out of my mouth.
Doug wants to know, wins or losses aside, do you feel pressure to keep pace with Breeze and Brady statistically?
Zero pressure.
Stuart from across the pond wonders, who has the most impressive tattoo on the current roster? And if you did have one, what would you do for inspiration on it?
I don't know that you have to use your tattoos as inspiration all the time.
I think he means what would inspire you to get one?
If I ever got a tattoo, it would have to be something brother-related. My brothers and I have talked about getting a brother, some sort of something that means something to the three of us. The most interesting tattoos on the team, Evan Dietrich Smith has quite a few that are interesting, and to say it in a nice way. The guy I like to ride the most about him is Tom Crabtree, who I love. And Crabby and I have become really good friends this year. He has, in my opinion, a terrible tribal tat down his left arm. Not sure what his mindset was at the time when he got that. But in his defense, I will say that on an anonymous poll, again, I don't know if I said this on the show or not, in a poll between the guys on the team when they talked about if zombies took over the earth, one player on your team that you would want by your side in a crazy battle to save your own life against these zombies, Tom Crabtree is the guy you want next to you. That was the overwhelming vote. So tribal tat and all, you want Tom Crabtree by your side.
So what did you think of the one that Shields got with the Super Bowl ring?
I heard he had maybe one too many diamonds in it or something.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's not an exact replica is what you're saying?
I think there was 14 championship diamonds on there instead of 13.
Huh.
I'm surprised you didn't know that. You're kind of the gossip queen right now.
I am. That's my role. And finally, this one comes from your friend Aaron, the crazy Packer dude. I do not mean to pry, but you don't by any chance happen to have six fingers on your right hand, do you?
I got a little beef with that boy.
Really?
I do.
I don't want to stir up trouble.
Saw some of the stuff that he said about me. So
okay.
He's once I get back on Twitter in the off season, I'm coming after you, Nagler.
So the Princess Bride quote not currying any favors, what you're saying?
Zero.
Well,
feeble attempt.
What a way to end it. This has been the latest installment of the Aaron Rodgers Show. We will do it again next week. Now, no more interference with this other job.
Five straight weeks, I think we're good to go.
Okay. You speaking of time changes, you like the fact that that Oakland game got moved to 3:15? I know you prefer your noon games.
No, I don't.
I didn't think you would. We will do it again next week, see if the Packers continue their undefeated streak and move to 12-0. You have been listening to the Aaron Rodgers Show, Tuesdays with Aaron.